we're in a remarkable new part of the Garma campus. A fantastic library. We're looking at a picture of Galarrwuy Yunupingu addressing a crowd for the Baranga statement, where we've got a young Bob Hawke and Jerry Hand looking out on a, looks like a Bumal ground. We've got pictures of elders all around us, past and present. And this is the new Garma Library, and it's the achievement of some rather special people who are going to talk to us about their journey. So, Robin, would you like to start and, you know, tell us how all this began?
Well, it's, for me, it's a long journey for me, and it started, but actually started in 1975, but in more recent times it started in 1996. I was studying, doing a course in Aboriginal culture at Tranby Aboriginal College in Sydney.
With the great Kevin Cook.
With the great Kevin Cook and Jack Beetson.
Wow.
And I was in the first group of non-Indigenous students that had ever been invited to study at Tranby. So it happened that Jack was a very good mate of Galarrwuy Yunupingu from the Tent Embassy days. So they were down there in the Tent Embassy together at in Canberra. And Jack thought it would be a really good idea to take us all up to see his mate at Dunia up here
in
Northeast Arnhem Land, which is Galarrwuy's homeland. So 29 of us came, four-wheel drives, driving cross-country to get to Dunia. And we spent a week there, being looked after by Galarrwuy and members of his family. Was the first Yolngu homeland that I'd been to. And I have to say that I felt in a lot of ways that I had a lot more in common with the Yolngu women who were looking after us than I did with most of the other people that I was travelling with. So I made a very close connection with those women. And at the end of the trip, which was very emotional, at the end we heard creation stories, ancestral stories, all the rest. And at the end of the trip, when we were leaving, the morning we were leaving, Galarrwuy gave a most beautiful speech, and he invited us to come back. Come back to Dunia, come back to here in Northeast Arnhem Land. And my story is that I always say I'm the one who came back. None of those other people on that trip returned, because there are a lot of logistical reasons for getting here too. It, you've got to have somewhere to stay, you've got to have confidence that you are going to be reaccepted up here as you've been invited. And I did. I had all of that. So I came back in September that year after being at Baranga, where we've got these photos, beautiful photos here. And I stayed initially with people who worked for Galarrwuy in the Gulmach Association, Sue and Neville Mitchell. Neville was Galarrwuy's general manager. From there, a bit later that year, I was adopted into the family. Adopted into the Gunambar family by Galarrwuy's wife. And there it started. At that stage, and so here comes the second homeland. My first homeland was Dunia. Second homeland, there's a homeland at Rotowoy on Arnhem Bay, where they were setting up a new homeland for Galarrwuy's mother-in-law. And I was there as that homeland and that airstrip were being built, and sat down with the family, became part of the family during those periods, which has sort of become a bit legendary in family stories, and it's constantly embellished further. But at that time, the father of that family, so the Galarrwuy's uncle, in fact, he was the last, he and his brother were the last two living survivors of Donald Thompson's North Coast Surveillance Unit during the Second World War, the two remaining old men. And so we sat together. He showed me his AM medal that he'd just been received. He just received from the Commonwealth Government, etc., etc. And then during that time in that new homeland, the family were discussing, the ladies, in particular Valerie's mother, my adoptive mother. They wanted to bring visitors to that homeland to share their culture and to provide something that would be for the younger generation. So they wanted the younger generation to have contact with visitors, to be able to share their culture and develop skills around cultural, which we're calling today cultural tourism, but for them, which was about cultural visits. And I came to Garma at that time. I met Mary, who's sitting here with us, and we decided that this dream, this vision that that old lady had and still has of bringing visitors to Yinyikay, to paying visitors to Yinyikay to share culture and to train the new generation, that needed to be translated into reality. Otherwise, it was just going to remain a dream. So I organised a group of six women from Sydney and Melbourne, particularly Mary here at the head of them, and we brought them up to Yinyikay in 2006 to trial it. And it was an extraordinary success. And that's the beginning of the cultural visits to Yinyikay homeland.
Wow.
So Mary was on that trip, so and she Mary, might like to say something.
So Mary, now, what was it that struck you as when you came up here for the first time with that trip? Did it... It obviously became a kind of passionate pursuit, in a way, if I can say that.
Yes, that's because my journey began with the saltwater exhibition at Heidi Gallery in about 1999, a fine art teacher. And the scale and complexity of those paintings was life-changing. Even with my husband, who's also a fine artist, it's the whole... the paintings were documented in the saltwater catalogue, and that would stretch anyone's intellect to its limits to try to understand it. But the thing that also struck you was that each of those paintings was associated with a homeland.
Isn't that wonderful?
Which
I mean,
never even heard.
It's a great thing to just stop and reflect on that, isn't it? Because, you know, it's the 50th anniversary of the Bach petition. Church panels were such a landmark. But really, those saltwater paintings were another sort of another incredible... You know,
that's
innovation,
right,
of Yolngu people trying to explain more, and it does fit right in with what Yinyikay and the homelands movements are all about.
And this old man that Robin is talking about, whose homeland was Roroy, wrote one of the declarations in the beginning of this catalogue, and I used to sit with a pencil and paper, many sheets of paper, trying to draw the connections that he was describing in that declaration to work out how things all link together. And in part of his declaration, he describes how this current goes on to Yinyikay. And so it's linking Roroy with Yinyikay, a Dua homeland, with a Yiricha homeland.
So it's a current in the sea.
Yes. And so when we first landed at Yinyikay, or before you land, when you look from the air, you can actually see the Dua and the Yiricha currents running side by side.
Isn't
out
that
to
wonderful?
Sea. Yeah, the whole thing is profound. That one current is Yiricha and the other current is Dua.
Mm.
One current is mother and the other one is child, Yothi Yindi.
Yeah.
So it's an embodiment of law, Yolngu law, the foundation of Yolngu law, all taught to me through that saltwater catalogue.
So what was it like when you first saw it at Heidi? And did you know Robin at that point?
No, that was not... No. Well, it's a fine art background. We'd all been to the major galleries in the United States, knew all about abstract expressionism, the importance of scale, the whole concept of what they call all-over painting. even Pollock, where he has these flows of energy that go from one side of the painting to the other. Well, when you looked at some of these saltwater paintings, they are just shimmering water from top to bottom. But hidden in that is iconography, imagery, that, you know, and layers and layers and layers of meaning. Some of those paintings you see from the top and from front on, the same as what Picasso did with Cubism. So you're seeing two views, which is exactly how the Yongmo are conceiving of some of the knowledge in these paintings. So I went back to my TAFE art department and tried to convince everyone to bring their students to this exhibition, and nobody would, because they said it's just bark painting and it's not contemporary. So that started the fire in me of, you know, the beginnings of this profound injustice born of ignorance, profound ignorance. So I found that Marcia Langford...
That's been quite a crazy career, because they're quite overwhelming. Right? Oh, they didn't even see them because they just dismissed them, I suppose.
That's right. No, they didn't see them. They wouldn't go
see them. They just grab you, don't they? It is. I mean, I think John McDonald referred to the latest Can You Be Done About exhibition in Annandale as better than Picasso or something of that
nature.
That's
right. Well, it was actually Picasso that was given a painting of a Marwolan, who saw a painting of Marwolan's and actually said, if only I could paint like that.
Yes.
Because there's a brotherhood of painters. Those painters don't see bark painting the way my art teachers were seeing. I took all the students, some of them were moved to tears by them, but it was the actual staff.
When you came to Yingike, you were able to actually witness for the first time the land that those Maranaa paintings came from.
Yeah. You see this muddy the muddy water that the sharks swim through, which is what is one of the seminal paintings. Well, they're all seminal paintings in the saltwater catalogue. So you can actually see the currents when you stand.
I mean, this is really remarkable because, you know, John Morse this afternoon and was talking about Lirawi tourism and, you know, the magic of Northeast Homeland. And I just think, you know, its incredible power is that it can come from something like a painting.
Yes.
And of course it did for you, Mary. The paintings took you to the homelands. And you can imagine a kind of tourism experience. Mm. It's a visitor. I think it's a better word. And, you know, where you could be every year following a painting from the saltwater catalogue and coming up and what a life-changing and enriching experience that kind of thing is. I mean, as good as any destination, scholarly or you know, the kind of informed, enlightened, tourism, I guess, in the world, you know, and it's in our own country.
That's right. I mean, if you go to the United States and revisit abstract expressionism, a lot of those paintings don't seem to have the same level of meaning and intensity of meaning as they did when we saw them in the 60s. But you go to look at the bark paintings and you realise that layer of meaning that you had is only the surface, and below that it goes on and on and on. So you can have that painting on your wall and know that there are layers of meaning, because I've got a wonderful bark painting, but each time you see it, it is still telling you something different. It's a different experience. But also with that is the humility of knowing that there is this depth of knowledge that you'll never access. But with a lot of the abstract expressionism, you have accessed it.
Mm.
You know, you might meditate and become a meditative state, but the layers of meaning are not anywhere near as deep as the layers of meaning are in those.